Welcome to Changing the Course, Building an Anti-Racist Education. My name is Nicholas Jones, Assistant Director of Student Support and Culture here at Noble Schools. In this episode, we talk to Ayanna Banks and Yesenia Maldonado about social emotional learning and the student experience and its connection to building an anti-racist education. You guys ready for this conversation? Let's jump in. Welcome to Changing the Course, Building an Anti-Racist Education. My name is Nicholas Jones, Assistant Director of Student Support and Culture here at Noble Schools. In this episode, I have the privilege of sitting down with Ayanna Banks and Yesenia Maldonado. But before we get into our conversations, Ayanna, Yesenia, would you all mind introducing yourselves to the audience?
Absolutely. Thank you for having us today.
Glad to have you.
My name is Ayanna Banks. I serve as the Manager of Academic Operations. I've been in education for a redacted number of years. and I often just like to say, oh, I'm just a math teacher. But I've had the privilege of serving as a teacher, an instructional leader, and a campus leader. And one of the greatest honors of my life has been being able to serve as the assistant principal at DRW and serve the historic community of North Lawndale.
And I'm Yesenia Maldonado, and I'm the assistant director of social emotional learning for the Noble Network. And I am new to Noble. This is my second school year. However, I have over 20 years as a social worker in a variety of settings. And really at the heart of social work is social emotional learning. I have the privilege and honor of serving all of our 18 campuses.
Awesome. So we're glad to have you both here in our space today. Before we jump into any conversation or content today, I want to do a quick check-in with you. So if you could, on a scale of 1 to 5, how are you feeling today? 5 being I'm being my best, 1, not so much.
I'm at a 4.75. Yeah. I'm feeling good today. It's Friday. We had a great day of professional development and community with people on campus yesterday. And so that's carrying over into today. And then I would say just today having a good day of kind of being in community with folks on, you know, providing consultation and being here. It's always a privilege.
Same. I'm going to also lean into not a whole number, about a 4.5. For many similar reasons, yesterday was a really great day, just being able to see our full community come together for our PD, our quarter one PD. We started the week with a bus stop temperature of 20, and it's going to be 70 degrees, and the sun is out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my little California heart is singing today.
4.75, 4.5.
Yep.
I'm going to just go to a 5 for myself.
Come on,
right. Yes. Make a whole number out of it. I agree. We definitely had a great opportunity yesterday to be in community with as a Noble community. And then again, excited to be here with you two today to start this conversation, to talk more about SEL work, and we'll talk more about our student experience surveying our systems to talk about that work as well. So thank you both for joining us today. And so we want to start our conversation off today talking about our student experience survey. So Ayanna, in your current role, you have been, how would you describe yourself? Right? Is it like the curator, is it the founder, is it the engineer around this system? And can you talk to our audience about what that process looks like for you in your role and how it impacts Noble as a whole?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my current role as Manager of Academic Operations, I have a portfolio of projects. And similar to a parent with a child or children, I shouldn't say which one is my favorite, but the SES or the Student Experience Survey is by far my favorite. And no, not the creator. Prior to my joining the Noble Support Team, the SES was piloted through the People Team at several campuses. And then soon thereafter, it was partnered with our Distinguished Teacher Program. And what we wanted to do is ensure that as we were naming which teachers within our network were distinguished, that there was student voice accompanied with that. And so soon thereafter, we fully recognized the value of that voice and what it could mean for ensuring that we were transformative in our work throughout the network and with our campuses. And so soon after I joined, we did scale the survey to all 18 campuses, and we moved it from an annual to a semi-annual administration. So currently, we're actually just ending the second week of a 3-week survey administration, which I'm excited about. We have more than half of our students who have already responded to the survey.
With a whole number, what would that be, about half?
6,000
out of 13,000 kids, so that's pretty good.
So we've heard from a lot of students so far from almost every campus. We have 2 campuses that will start administration this coming Monday. And so we've played around a bit with when is it best to capture this data. And what really works for us currently is around the close of Q1 and then around the close of Q3. And what that allows us to do is to get that data, analyze it, share it with students in time for the second semester. So any major adjustments a campus or a network or us as a network would need to make, we have enough time to do that and do that thoughtfully and ensure that we are co-creating those next steps with students. And then similarly with Q3, that there's still time to make some adjustments for that last quarter. But then also to allow our adults, our instructional leaders, and our campus leaders to make those adjustments in preparation for the coming school year. Mm-hmm. So when they're having end-of-year conversations as a staff and with individual teachers, they're already prepared for, like, these will be the goals as we're going into next year, allowing people to ruminate on that throughout the summer.
Mm-hmm. So a quarter one is the end of, will be end of our fall session, fall mm-hmm. quarter.
Yeah.
So you got 10 weeks of experience that a student has, and we typically start our school year off very strong and engaging to hook students back into the school space and their learning. And then the quarter three is the spring, after going through the fall, the winter, and now we have the spring right before it's sunny in Chicago and this weather feels good. And so how does that allow us to pivot?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'll just step back just for a minute. So of course, whenever somebody hears like, oh yes, we are inclusive of student voice, we just assume that everybody is on board and have a full understanding of what that means. And we don't. Like, everything requires some type of a framework. And, you know, we're at Noble, we live by frameworks. So a year or so ago, we created what we call the Student Experience Survey Framework, which is how do we cultivate a culture of student voice, and by which we have to understand that there is a process. Like, there is a deep sense of responsibility we all have in asking our students to be especially vulnerable about their experiences. And what that requires of us is a disciplined practice of analyzing that data, sharing that data back out with students so they know that we did hear them, so they know that that data, those experiences did not fall into a black hole somewhere at the network. Mm-hmm. And then adjusting, naming that we did not get it right, and in that adjustment, inviting them in to co-create what should be next. So what should happen is that we're not just trying to improve year over year, but we're even trying to improve from fall to spring. And so even as they're analyzing that data in December, when students return even from winter break, they should feel a shift then. As they're transitioning into their second semester spaces, there should be a shift then. And so what we should see with fidelity to the framework is improved favorability from fall to spring. But what that requires is discipline. And it requires us mirroring some of the data-driven, which are now like data-informed practices that we've had with assessments. And so the ask is for adults to be committed to student voice and that data in the same way they have committed to that through the use of assessments.
So when we go into the student experience, you talk about inclusive experiences, how does that framework align with like our anti-racist commitment?
Yeah, absolutely. So even what is just key to anti-racism is ensuring that we are hearing from everybody. And it is fundamental to our work to understand that part of who are our experts are the people that we serve. It is our young people. And we can go out, we can spend the money on consultants and all of those things, but our students are very clear about who they are, what their experiences are, not only in their classes and the school building, but also in the city and the communities in which they live. And they are also very clear about the world they are entering and what they want to be true for their lives. And so when we partner with them, we can then move the needle on all of our metrics much faster with their input and us being invested and disciplined in using that data.
So as a campus, after that quarter one, I get my student experience survey. We do our deep dive into the student experience that quarter. And what kind of pivots would a campus potentially make after reviewing that data?
So one of the things that we encourage our campuses to do this year is within their annual strategic plan is to name some SES goals. Some of those revolved around belonging, some of them around engagement. You know, engagement, especially as we shifted back from remote to in-person learning, has been a little bit low. Safety, pedagogical effectiveness. So whatever a campus picked, we would ask them to review it aligned to their strategic plan from the year. And then from there, moving forward with, okay, how then, what then need to be our next steps to improve upon it? But before doing so, ensuring they understand what they do right and what they have done right, and making sure they don't make those adjustments. Yeah. And then it's like, wait a minute, we were doing really well with belonging, and we shifted. So we have to, while we're trying to adjust and we're always trying to move the needle, also being clear on what is it that we are doing well, because we're doing a bunch of things very well. Our data revealed that with regard to DEI and our students feeling like all students, regardless of identity, ability, orientation, feel like they are treated fairly, that is really high. How our students are feeling in advisory, that being a very safe space, that is very high. And so making sure that we are clear on that, as well as staff and student relationships. Our students identify there are multiple adults on each campus with whom they feel are trusted adults and trusted spaces for them to go. So I would say starting with those trends, knowing those things, and then where do we need to improve? And I'll repeat, ensuring we're inviting our students in to help with that creation of what should be true moving forward.
I seen that you sit here nodding and agreeing
with what Ayana
is saying. And your work is closely related to that student experience as well.
Absolutely.
So you talk to the audience more about, or introduce to the audience essentially, what is your role and how does it connect with the student experience?
So my role is really looking at the social emotional learning strategy for our network. And so just to take a step back, just kind of oftentimes I get asked, or I ask people, what is social emotional learning? It's probably one of the first questions I ask people, because if you ask anyone, if I go to any campus, they might have a different interpretation of what that looks like. They might be saying it's restorative practices. They might be saying it's mental wellness. They might be saying it's mindfulness. You know, there's a variety of things that come up when we think about the social emotional well-being and learning that needs to take place. And all of those things are correct. They're all related, because what it ultimately, I usually say it's four hows. It's how we understand ourselves and our identities and how they intersect. It's how we also kind of think about how we understand our emotions, our feelings, our thoughts, and what we do with that. And it's also how we relate to each other and understand each other. And that fourth how is how we put that together to make decisions and choices. Okay, so when we think about that, then we align that to thinking about the voice that we have and the indicators. And those things are incorporated into the social emotional learning and the SES. Because those categories around, like, how am I in this space? I have to understand myself to know how I am in that space. And the brilliance that you already spoke to aligns so closely to what social emotional learning is. And so when we were looking at starting this and starting the strategy, the first thing I did was look at the data that existed in our network. And the student experience survey was a key part of that data that was looked at. And we looked at specifically, what do we know around social emotional learning and what could move? What could move the needle? And what does it have the most impact related to that we're already asking our students about? And it was engagement, how I engage in my classroom, how I engage in the space, in the environment. It was also, do I feel like I belong in that space? And then the third was our student-to-teacher relationships. Now, the SES asked for a lot of different, you know, voice. Those were the three that when we looked at social-emotional learning and what it could help support within the network, those are those three categories that we really wanted to dig into. And so I looked at that data. I looked at what it looks like in our advisory spaces. I looked at what it looks like in our schools and our classrooms. And then we looked at our five essentials data. And we looked at, you know, our schools, are they organized for change? Are they ready to kind of take something on? Because this is a commitment. It's not a one classroom thing. It's not a teacher that had a great orientation in a professional development that goes and tries. It's school-wide. It's everyone holds that space for our students, because we know research tells us it has the impact that we're looking for. And so it starts with a data-driven process. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the SES gave me when I first started doing this work at the network, is the data to hear from our students and what they needed and what they need from our campuses.
It's almost like without the student experience survey data, it sounded like it would have made that strategic plan a little more difficult to craft.
Absolutely.
So if I was in a space where, you know, I didn't have that data available to me, but my school or my district was in a space where, like, we want to prioritize SEL on working our spaces, like, what would I start even crafting? And I think this can go for both of you all with your experiences. Like, what would an organization or a school district even start at?
It has to start with the people. It has to, you figuring out how, if it's not a formalized process, how are we getting in spaces and hearing from people? And doing a listening tour, doing focus groups, you know, having those conversations, speaking to our people. And, you know, the SES provides a structured way to do that and an organized way to see that data come back. If you're in a setting where that doesn't exist, listening in spaces, asking questions, is because our people are ready to talk. People in any setting. Ask me what I'm thinking about something, I'm going to tell you. If you're being seen and heard and valued, that's going to be key to that process. So if you're in a district that doesn't have a climate survey, which I'd be surprised because many of us should have that by at this point in our
existence. And for our audience who may not understand, like climate, what are you referring to? Can you give a quick description of like what climate would measure? If I had a climate survey, what would I be trying to measure?
We would be asking a lot of the questions we ask on our SES survey, but we'd be asking questions like, do you feel safe on your way to school? Do you feel, do you see if you have a problem at school, do you have somebody to go to? Are you engaged in things? You know, are you here? Do you come to school? Do you like coming to school? Mm-hmm. And what makes it something, a place you want to be? So there's, you know, a lot of great tools that are out there. There's things that are free online. So you can get access to something just asking those questions. But good teachers and good administrators want to know the answers to those questions.
Yeah, I had the option, opportunity this year to visit some campuses. And one of the campuses that I visited, there was a social justice teacher. And one of her strategies in her class to gauge students coming in every day was she had a chart that had the happy face, smiley face, and each face quadrant had three or four different faces to even say that if I came into a space and I was sad, that there's still a range of sadness that I could be in. And then she talked to me about how she's able to then adjust her classroom, the content, the activities based off what the majority of the class felt like coming into that day. So that was just a very simple, like for me, it was like, oh, this is a very simple way and an accessible way for students to be able to communicate to a teacher, hey, today may not be the day. We may not be able to talk about George Floyd today in this space. I may need to talk about something else due to my experience I had over the weekend. So I thought that was pretty dope of her to do that and prioritize that in that space.
Add to that?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so if I lean back on my classroom experience, I would say even just trying to find systems that are already in place, many teachers offer an exit ticket. Mm-hmm. And typically that exit ticket is to determine proficiency on whatever was taught that day or that week. But what would it be to add those additional questions around, did you feel connected to the materials today? Or rather, in what ways did you feel connected to it? And if you didn't, what is this? How is this connecting for you? In what ways should I teach this next year? What would you like for me to talk about tomorrow that slightly relates to that? And even if I step back before that, if this is not a system that is currently in place, checking your mindset. Are you actually willing to hear what students say? And if you ask, are you going to be willing to accept it and make those adjustments?
That was my question. I don't cut you off, but when you were talking, I was like, what is the point of asking the questions if we're not prepared to respond to the question?
That's it right there.
And that gets us back to being in this transactional space that's like, oh yeah, like we want to know how kids feel. We're going to give them this survey, but then like, what you do with it?
Absolutely. It's a two versus with.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so I love, it's great to hear that like there is action behind our attention behind getting that student experience in front of us. And so as we think about Noble as a whole, we take the student experience survey, we are prioritizing SEL this school year. What is that SEL work starting to craft into after you've been able to put the strategic plan together and even start working with schools on what that looks like?
Absolutely. So I'm excited because in January, we started a pilot with four campuses. And so that was based on data. We had them look at their data and talk about how they wanted to kind of work on it. And then we used a framework, and that framework is really evidence-based and evidence-informed. It comes to us from the Collaborative for Academic and Social-Emotional Learning, which is known as CASEL, which is that clearinghouse of all research-based practices. And they gave us a model to kind of operate from. And part of that model is really organizing a committee that's made of multidisciplinary voices and diverse voices at the table, students being one of those voices, and families being those voices as well. And so we really said, like, let's have a committee that's made up of teachers, made up of culture team members or disciplinarians in our school, administrators, all those different folks that interact with students on a day-to-day basis, as well as having students at the table and having families at the table. And if you weren't able to get into that space or be ready for that, how are you always centering the experiences of our families and our students? And that came from data, that came from focus groups that they had, it came from surveys. But what we wanted to do is make sure that we are always organized around how do we get all the diverse voices at the table. And so then they set the course. Mm-hmm. They are really a committee that is made up of looking at data. They're a committee made up of, you know, looking at teaching themselves around best practices. And so they meet on a monthly basis. And on a monthly basis, they have immense conversations. I will say I go to all these committee meetings, and we start off with four. We're now up to seven campuses in our second year. And the hope is that we continue to learn from that process and we continue to go. But that pilot has, you know, that committee is a key part of it. It also has the adult social emotional learning that has to come along with that. And we partner with the university to be able to provide some really structured ways to do that learning. And then the third is that we really then take a look at the student programming and look at evidence-based pieces. And we also, as a committee, we're looking at what that looks like. And so, you know, this how this works, and I'll give you just a quick example from one of the meetings and the value that families have when they're in this space and our students when they're in that space for committees. So I was at one of our schools that was have those voices at the table, and they were looking at what is our social-emotional learning vision? What is the vision we want to have for our school? And they had a draft vision statement, and they had all the important words. You know, they had restorative practice on there. They had all of these words. And they, and then all of a sudden, you know, one of the family members said, I don't know what this means. I don't know about the accessibility to the language that we're choosing to put out there as our vision as a committee. And so we shifted. We paused. And then we went around the room and said, you know, what does this mean to you? And what is missing? And the vision that came out was one that was accessible to people. The one that they landed on was strong. It was representative of diverse voices. And I guarantee if those folks were not in the space, that would have gone presented out to the community, and people would have been left with those questions. But because they were in the space, we were able to kind of avoid that detour in this process. And also just, it's always delightful to be in space when students, when we're talking about like, oh, task, and then like, oh, I know how to make a flyer. I know how to get people, and they know how to get people, you know, excited about this work. And some students advocated for, you know, for this to be incorporated in as a class at their campus. So there's so many great things that come out of these committees, which is a core part of this work, but it has to be with those diverse voices at the table and figuring out, you know, how to get those, you know, so they meet after school.
That like co-creation is super critical for this process too. And I think that you mentioned earlier about the co-creation being important, because like that goes back into what they learn, what they digest, and how they experience the instructional piece as well. And so I'm ping back and forth to make sure like we all getting, you know, opportunity to speak on this work, is that hearing from students in that space, how is that same data being used to inform like what students are doing inside of classrooms to create culturally responsible spaces for students?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one thing is it's allowed for many adults to understand the value of what students have experienced and their expertise. And so what I have noticed is, one, more formative surveys happening at the campus level. I've actually seen the increase, as I've previously mentioned, augmenting exit tickets to explore engagement and connection and belonging within that space. And so I'm seeing more of a turn to students as opposed to a turn to the other adults to seek those answers.
So that's like, hey, how do you think class went today, co-teacher? Mm-hmm. Like, you think the kids enjoyed that versus pulling kids afterwards and pulling that exit ticket out? How did you feel like? Okay.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a warm in my heart. Because you're both mentioning, you know, there's three signature social-emotional learning practices. And actually, I did a training on it for the network when we were looking at data. And the first is that welcoming and engaging activity, that threshold greeting when somebody walks into your space. So when you talked about kind of that check-in with the faces and the smiley faces, that's what that welcoming activity looks like. And then it's the engaging pedagogy. So it's the things that we do, but understanding why we do it. So if we're working in a group exercise, for example, it's like, how do we operate when we're in this group exercise? What are the expectations? How do we understand? How do we listen to each other's voices in this space? And then how do we come to that conclusion, which also is measured within the SES survey? And then that last is that optimistic closure. It's like, how do we end in a way? And it's not always like roses. You know, optimistic means like, how do we end this space understanding what we're still curious about? What did we learn today? And are we still curious about learning? Or what didn't hit the mark for us? And what could help us? So those exit tickets that you're describing is that, like that warms my heart to kind of hear those three things, because that's ultimately what any good teacher already does naturally in their classroom. The ones that are most effective do those things. And then those are things that we can also learn to do. And they're low lifts. It's not, you know, it doesn't take a lot of time, but those pieces really do work towards increasing that engagement.
So in your business on campuses, have you identified strategies of seeing SEL in action in some of our strongest spaces?
Absolutely. So I've seen people do gratitude journals in the beginning of class and talk about what are you grateful for today? Who are you grateful for today? They've shared that with other staff as well at the school. I've seen, you know, most recently I went to a class and they, the teacher asked, like, who are your favorite music artists? And then he pulled up a video of Bad Bunny's interview with Trevor Noah. And he was talking about mental health in that clip that he pulled up. And then they started talking about, like, well, what did he say about mental health? What about your mental health? They made that connection to that. And then they connected it to a character in a book that they were reading. So those connections, and you would have, you know, that's that engaging pedagogy. It's that piece where, like, every student was hanging on every, you know, word that Bad Bunny was saying in the video. And the teacher then had their attention and was able to make a connection to then, you know, how does that mean for your emotions, the things that, you know, this is somebody you look up to, this is someone you connect with, like they're talking about this. That means it's okay to talk about here. Mm-hmm. And it also relates to the literature we're reading and the book that we're reading. So those connections, I mean, those are just a few examples. I see them countless times. I will tell you that, you know, when I see people doing those exit tickets, it warms my heart. Mm-hmm. And
at the same time. So like that experience that teacher provided for our students, how would that data show up in the student experience survey at the end of quarter one?
Absolutely. So there are several categories. So first of all, our students are able to provide feedback and share about their experiences for their advisory, their classrooms, and the overall school building. So within the classroom, that would fall into the engagement category, into the belonging category, and even the staff and student relationship category. We would see that high, like, do you feel like you belong in this space? Absolutely. Yes. Are you engaged and connected to the material in yes. this space? Are you eager to participate in this space? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like your teacher respects you or knows who you are? Absolutely. So teachers would know that that is a practice that they should continue
to do. And that informs yeah. how they continue to build culturally mm-hmm. responsive and relevant pedagogy in their classroom spaces. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you get to this space where when you hear the catchwords, and we talked about this in previous episodes about restorative practices. It's like the go-to thing when people want to, you know, kind of turn around how they have been responding to students and working with our young people. And SEL falls in that same category of the thing that we hear about, we know about, but it's also like not very sure around how to move forward and implement it effectively. And through that implementation, we typically find that if it's not done properly and with the right intention and strategically, it can definitely cause some harm to students and to adults as well. To avoid that happening, like, where would I start as a district administrator or a school leader to say, like, I identified as a school leader that SEL is important. Our students' experience at our school spaces are important. Where do I start?
Yeah, I would say you start by looking at the research, looking at what's out there. I think it's also looking at talking to your people and seeing what's needed. What are your pain points? What are the things you're already doing well? And I would say the other thing that's really important to kind of think about is understanding that SEL is grounded in anti-racism. That's why it connects so well to the work that's happening here at Noble. It is grounded in that because if I don't understand the experiences that my young people, my staff might be having outside of these spaces, how do I understand enough to engage them? Mm-hmm. And so it's grounded there first and foremost, because if it's not, what can happen and what has happened in some other spaces is that it starts becoming a tool for compliance, an issue for control. I'll quote Dr. Dina Simmons that it becomes white supremacy with a hug. Mm-hmm. It becomes a situation where we're starting to do these things based on standards and compliance. Someone is yelling to somebody to go to a calm corner and take deep breaths, you know, when I'm not regulated myself. You know, so it's understanding that those things are based in, you know, understanding our own experiences, how we show up in spaces, but also how our young people show up with their brilliance and gifts and that how we value and understand that. So, you know, SEL in its purest form is grounded in the understanding that that has to happen, because you can't do things that are disingenuous to people's experiences. Yeah. You have to know that, you know, deep breathing in the context of the relaxation that it provides your body. But if that is something that is really difficult to do outside of the space, and I don't want to close my eyes because when I close my eyes, I don't know what can happen, that's disconnected to someone's experience. But that's a practice that people can do. But if I understand that, hey, I just need you to take a moment and a break, and whatever that looks like to you, that's the practice The practice is doing what works for you. And my job as an educator is to figure out what is it that works for you. And those are the questions we need to be asking.
So as a world where the classroom teacher can ask the class to take a mindful minute or a mindful moment and allow them to do that however way they want to do it.
Yes.
Close your eyes.
Dart your eyes away from someone.
Look at the ceiling. Yep. And that would be fine.
Absolutely. That's how it should be. Mm-hmm. It's not one way. There's so many ways to do this work. The point is to kind of give your body and your brain the opportunity to ground itself and become ready to learn.
And it sounds like those skills, I mean, I'll speak for myself. Like I am a deep breather. Mm-hmm. In moments in which I feel anxious about things, my go-to is to stop, pause. When I'm by myself, close my eyes and to take that moment to gather myself as an adult. And even though when I worked on the campus side, like I found myself having to step into my office at times after engaging in situations that I would deem as difficult or brought me emotions that I needed to know that, hey, I need to take a step back for myself to calm, to breathe before I went back and re-engaged students. Because for me, it was important that like, I didn't impact their experience. And like part of feeling safe and part of being belong is your interactions with adults. And so having to interact with 1,000 kids, me having a bad moment could turn into a different situation because I didn't regulate myself and then I didn't apply the skills that I had or even model those skills to students in the moment in which they saw me frustrated. And so like, how did I respond when you elevated? Did I elevate with you or did I model for you? Hey, how do I become self-aware in that moment? What do I identify my needs? And then what strategies do I have to ensure that like I don't pop over and turn this into a situation where now we have to apply different strategies to avoid ultimately a student receiving some type of consequence or having a parent coming up? Well, like, I may have been a root cause of it because I didn't self-manage myself in that moment. And so the thing that leads me to asking, like, how important is it for adults to really understand how critical it is for them to engage themselves in SEL, work for themselves before it even gets to a classroom space or to a school building?
That's essential. I mean, that is when we started working with campuses where we started. Our whole first half was we weren't even touching the student work. We were really just starting with our adults. And as I mentioned, one of the things is that as we get older in our education system, our teachers and our educators become specialized. We become specialized in content. And so I may be an excellent science teacher, biology teacher, but English isn't my jam. But I still have to incorporate the social-emotional elements within all of this. So part of that has to start with me. I have to learn about that part for myself in order to learn about those competencies of self-awareness, social awareness, relationship skills, self-management, and responsible decision-making. I have to see where do I lead into that space? Where do I start there? And then how can I teach something that I don't know? So you have to start with the education of our teachers first.
And the education is important because when you just said that, I'm like, well, I would imagine in spaces like people do some of those things, but just don't have the SEL language to say, hey, I do this. I'm self-aware. How do you teach self-awareness in your class? Like, and you were describing it, sit there and say, we do reflection activities all the time.
We do it all the time. And that's actually where we start. Yeah, yeah. We start with an assessment of like, what do you already do? You do a lot of these things naturally. I think about my best teachers. I think about my best bosses. In life, those were people who took time to get to know me. Those are people that asked me questions and listened. And that act of listening and that piece is about me having that self-awareness and also the ability to have management, to not jump into every moment. Those are the best people have that social awareness, have those relationship building skills. And so we do those, a lot of things, and then we just have to name them and figure out, okay, what got me there? Mm-hmm. What helped me understand that? And then how can I teach that?
So in our pilot programs, the first year, we focused on adults, did some SEL, intentional work. There was some restorative practices that came in so they can understand what those look like. And so we in year two, quarter one, year two with those same schools. I think they had four schools.
Four schools are in year two, yeah.
How's that work going currently?
You know what?
And then quarter one.
You asked me a great question. Actually, I'm just coming off of hearing them on a panel. Our campuses spoke on a panel to other campuses about the work, their lessons learned. And it's a journey, and it's an honest journey. And it's and one of the best things that they said is that we paused in order to then go fast. And we paused in starting with our adults in the space. We paused that space first, and we actually partnered up with that university partner to be able to do a structured way. And it was online. It was self-paced, and then they had coaching sessions to go along with it. So then they had an opportunity to do some work at their own pace, and it wasn't about a curriculum. It was all about what is my self-awareness? How do I show up in a classroom? How do I show up in my personal life? And then, so it was emotionally, I think it had a lift to it. And then they got a chance to then hear each other and be in space and community and coach along how can I then teach this later on. And so that part of it, they spoke very highly about. They in the panel discussion, they spoke about a lot of the great things that they're doing in that journey that they're on. But they said the number one thing was that they had to start with themselves. Mm-hmm. They had to start with themselves learning it. And then in this year two, what they're doing is they've done the learning, they're paying it forward. Mm-hmm. Many of those that kind of got that is they're doing those same lessons that they got at the micro-credential in all staff meetings, in weekly meetings. So now they're championing this work throughout their campus. The idea is that you teach one and then you keep them teaching how to fish and then they continue to do this work. So it doesn't live with just the people that got trained. They're now paying it forward to others. And then we brought some more campuses along to start that journey, and then they'll be paying it forward throughout their campus. And then they just spoke to all of our campuses just yesterday about the work. And I could see the excitement in the room of, mm-hmm. like, where people are. And also some that are along that journey as well are already on their own. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, we can do that too. We looked at the 10 indicators of what does school-wide SEL look like. And I will say the one that is youth engagement and voice. And so that was the one that they're like, oh, yeah, well, we're all doing the SES. We're all doing this. So we're already on this journey.
Getting down to practice, our portion of the podcast in which we asked our guests to provide a strategy or a tip for our audience. Ayanna, could you mind going first?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the top of our conversation, I shared or illuminated that this is my favorite project out of those that exist within my portfolio. But in part is because of the need of a deep sense of responsibility with the data that we are holding and collecting. So for me, I know that I need to be a good steward of student voice data. So when I think about what I would share to people is before you ever ask of a student to be vulnerable, one, examine yourself. Are you going to be willing to be similarly vulnerable? And then two, what then is your process for that data? We cannot just collect it and hold it. So really examine what then is going to be my practice on the back end of that and share that with students so that they can also hold you accountable. Mm. Hey, you said you were going to ask these things because you were going to do this and that with it. And so I would ask people to explore that. Understand that when you ask of a young person to share, they're going to share. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do with it? Are you primed to be a good steward of student or young people vulnerabilities?
They don't ask you what I want for dinner. You don't plan on.
Listen, I think we've all been there. Like, if you're going to ask something of me, there is an expectation that you're going to do right by it. Mm-hmm. It might not be perfect, but just right by it, that you're going to honor that. And so in the same ways we need that, our young people especially need that.
You were just given a gift.
Yeah, you were just given a gift. Yeah, I love that.
I think in terms of the practice, I go back to those three signature practices because they're outside of a classroom. You can do those three signature practices as a leader, as you how you engage with your staff. I incorporate those when I did staff meetings. I incorporate those three practices in my supervision with people. So that's, you know, the welcoming activity that is just engaging people right where they are and acknowledging them as a human being first, mm-hmm. how they're coming into the space. And then it's just kind of also explain why, get to the meat of what we're doing and do it in a way that is relatable to people. And if even, you know, our task that we have connected to our mission, connected to why we're here. And then the third is make sure that, you know, you're checking with people as they leave the space. How was this for you today? What could we do differently to make you more engaged? You know, as a leader, when you ask those questions, as a teacher, as you ask those questions, as a social worker, you know, in session with students, you know, you can incorporate those three things in many of your interactions. I do a dinner table with my family, so I take them everywhere I go. You know, before I get jump into everything, I'm going to ask, you know, like, how was your day today? You know, and have that, what was the highlight and the low light of your day? That's that check-in.
Ayanna, Yesenia, thank you for joining Changing the Course today. But before we let you go, I need you both to look at your respective cameras and read our founding quote by Bettina Love.
To love all children, we must struggle together to create the schools we are taught to believe are impossible.
Schools built on justice, love, joy, and anti-racism.
Yesenia, Ayanna, thanks for joining Changing the Course.
Thanks for having us.
Great
this is great.
Me.
Appreciate it.
Changing the Course is a video podcast series produced by Noble Schools, a leading public charter school network in Chicago, Illinois. If you're interested in seeing the video for this episode or learning more about Noble, you can visit us at nobleschools.org. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Changing the Course is hosted by Nicholas Jones, Assistant Director of Student Support and Culture at Noble Schools. This episode was produced by Janelle Jones, Nicholas Jones, and Ash Kenyon, and it was edited by Ash Kenyon and Jasmine Stackhouse. The music you heard throughout this episode was created by Angel Mancia, one of our students at Mutian College Prep. It was mixed and edited by David Reddick, a music teacher at Mutian. If you have any questions you would like us to answer during this series, send us an email at communications@nobleschools.org with the subject line, Question for Changing the Course. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.